Five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Paul, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 44 of Field Pass Hockey's American Hockey League podcast, The Holy Grail. This is the episode for December the 1st, and we are here to give you a recap of the last week in American Hockey League action. Now, in today's show, of course, we're not only going to be talking about some of the latest in AHL news, but we are also going to be joined later by a special guest, fresh off of his signing a professional tryout contract with the San Jose Barracuda. Jalen Smarek is going to be joining us to talk about his career, inclusion in hockey, his volunteer work in Detroit, and Andrew might even have a special story to kind of help jog his memory a little bit. You'll want to tune in for that. But to start off the show, like usual, we have a rapid fire question for our introductions, and so you can get to know us a little bit better. Now, Jeremy was the one that came up with this one, but guys, what is the very first hockey game that you can recall attending?
Well, growing up in the holy grounds of Joe Louis Arena, as I did from a young age, I remember my first one, I remember seeing the Gretzky era LA Kings in those white and silver jerseys, and I actually back in the 90s they were the ways were colored, so they were black and silver jerseys, and I remember a Sergei Fedorov bomb of a slap shot going into the net, and that's about as good of a first game as I can ask for.
And I'm Dina Weinheimer. Now, I live in Columbus now, but where I grew up was about 90 minutes east of here, very small town. Didn't really have any experience with hockey live until I went to college at Ohio Dominican starting in 2002. And, well, I actually managed to pick a good game. It was the Blue Jackets versus the Florida Panthers in a 4-1 win at Nationwide Arena. It was a good one.
And what's up, everyone? My name is Jeremy Paul, and I cover the Cleveland Monsters for Field Pass Hockey. And so for me, Andrew, you're going to want to close your ears for this one, I think, buddy, because I attended the first hockey game I remember attending was it was a Columbus Blue Jackets Minnesota Wild game, and I want everybody to guess who scored the game-winning goal for Columbus in that game.
Yeah, I think I know.
It's Sergei Fedorov. So I'll take – hey, you and I have something in common, Andrew.
Hey, I'm glad he was able to help you guys out too. He helped me out about three times in my young career.
And I'm Zach Power. I've yet to catch the NHL off the bucket list yet, but my first hockey game memory, at least in person, was with the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and it was the St. John's Fog Devils at that time. Their mascot, Scorch, I remember meeting him very vividly. It was me and my sister, and I remember that game so fondly because they had a Timbit toss, which are little Canadian donuts, and they threw them up into the stands, and I remember eating them and watching the Fog Devils win at that time.
And I'm a very bad moderator, and I have just been plugging Andrew on the bottom of our screen. So, you know, I'll kind of do a little plug here for the rest of us. If you're watching on YouTube, I was a little distracted. We had a little bit of technical difficulties getting going in the show today. But if you're wondering, hey, where's Corey? Well, he is so dedicated to his beat. He's currently covering a game right now with Hershey and Wilkes-Barre Scranton towards the end of the first, and the Pens are up 2-1. So hopefully he's having a good time covering that game. And unfortunately this week and next, it's just not working out for the schedule where he can be here, but he will be back very soon. Well, luckily we don't have any breaking news this week. So we're just going to go ahead and move right on in to the weekly news recap.
And to start off, we have a milestone alert. And mentioning those Penguins, we're going to Dustin Tokarski, who reached his 200th career win with a shootout victory on Friday against the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Now, Tokarski has an extensive AHL resume dating back to the 2009-10 AHL season, and he's had starts with Norfolk, Syracuse, Hamilton, St. John's, all then all the way to San Diego, Lehigh Valley, Hartford, Charlotte, Rochester, and then finally here in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton. So, tried and tested, true veteran, well-earned 200th career win. Congratulations, Dustin.
Yeah, and he's in net again tonight against Hunter Shepherd, so you never know.
That's a big matchup there.
Oh, yeah, kind of two of the top goaltenders. I can see why Corey kind of elected to do that instead. But now it's time for the American Hockey League's and Howie's Hockey Tape AHL Player of the Week. And for last week, the honor goes to Calgary Wranglers forward Matthew Phillips. Now, Phillips tallied 3 goals and 6 assists for a total of 9 points over 4 games last week, moving him to the top of the AHL scoring leaderboard. Starting it off last Tuesday evening, he notched a goal and an assist to help the Wranglers to a 5-3 win over the Coachella Valley Firebirds, and added another assist on Thursday's rematch with the Firebirds. And then moving to Friday, he scored 2 goals and assisted on another as Calgary downed the Abbotsford Canucks 5-1. Then on Sunday afternoon, wow, what a busy stretch for those guys. He recorded 3 more assists in the Wranglers 4-3 overtime win against Abbotsford. Now he has a total of 12 points in his last 6 games and leads the AHL with 13 goals, 26 points in 18 contests with the Calgary Wranglers.
And if you thought that your fan base had some tough times with injuries, step aside unless you're a Belleville fan, because boy, oh boy, they posted this to Twitter and I just couldn't resist sharing this with you guys. So this was Saturday's game and they had 11 injuries, believe it or not, heading into that game. And watch me butcher half of these names as well. Jarventine, Hellenruck, Betts, Grieg, Sogard, Koniker, Rubens, Asperot, Doust, Zaitsev, and Lawton. All of them out for that game, some of them week to week, day to day, indefinite, season-ending injury for Doust, and illnesses for Zaitsev and Lawton. But it's one thing to have a couple of injuries, but to have 11 players out, kudos and props to them.
And then on top of that, I mean, on their game against Laval, they won, and not just even by a little bit, 4-1 with all those injuries. I mean, I know it's the Rocket. It just feels so weird saying that, because last year we were talking about how good the Rocket were.
Yeah, Eastern Conference runner up, right? I mean, like, total fall from grace there.
Just a little bit, but I guess a lot of huge props in that game. I'm going to talk about Jake Lucchini, 2 assists. Antoine Bebo, franchise record 49 saves. I mean, I wouldn't have guessed that they would have won with that many injuries. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and just move right on in to our, well, it's my favorite segment. You guys know it and love it. The swipe left and swipe right. So we're going to be sharing our hot takes from around the league. We're going to go in alphabetical order as always. And, you know, this is airing on a brand new month. So if all our super swipes are back in play, standard rules, swipe left if we don't like it, swipe right if we do, super swipe up if that is just the best take you have heard all month. So Andrew, kick us off.
So I got a swipe that I'm pretty sure I mentioned last year, but you know what? I'm just going to come back and bring it up again. A couple years ago, it was Phil Tomasino and Seth Jarvis lighting it up for the Chicago Wolves. This year, the big name has been Shane Wright, and he's going to get a lot of attention on this week's episode. But the kids are getting faster, stronger, better, and you know what? I think that there's got the 20-year rule for the AHL. It has to be amended. Now, I'm not saying maybe not for everyone, but I don't know, maybe just for the first rounders, or something for these. A lot of these young kids are either just not playing up in the NHL, or they're just going through the motions in juniors, and it's not really helping their development a lot. So let's get them involved in the pro game at a high level here in the AHL, and you're not feeding them to the Wolves in the National League. And you know what? If we can get a few more butts in seats or season tickets sold with some big names coming through, it's all the better, I say.
The problem with that is, though, the younger leagues or the, I guess, lower leagues, the CHL and things, they're not going to want to give up those young kids that are the first rounders because, well, for the exact same reason, butts in seats. So
where's the money going to talk?
I know, but
a lot of these leagues can't really pay them, right? Some of these players, I know personally that there's a couple teams that give like honorariums to players, but like, I don't think that a lot of these like young players get any sort of funding, right?
So what's the rule in the CHL now? Like if the player is already playing there and
basically it's if you have, it was weird in that 21 season because of COVID and the OHL shutting down. So Tomasino was able to play there all year, but basically if you have junior eligibility and you get the assignment, and you're not playing in the NHL, you can't. No teenagers in the AHL unless you come over from Europe is basically what it boils down to.
So junior hockey as well, you have until I think you're 20 to kind of be able to have a crack at that. I think you can go as young as 17, maybe 16. 16 is the exceptional status, I think.
Right. Yeah. If you're John Tavares or Bobby Orr.
Yeah.
I mean, do I want to see this happen? Yes, that'd be great for development into the pro game. So, like, that part gets a swipe right from me. But I don't know if you could ever convince the powers that be in these junior leagues to give up those kids.
What I have to say here is it's really hard for me not to use my super swipe on this because what you're going to see happen, right, is if this doesn't change to some extent, I'm not saying you have to go like full on, like get rid of the agreement. I mean, they just renewed the agreement. So, I mean, that's not happening anytime soon, but I mean, maybe there is an AHL exemption status, right? Where it is like, if somebody is to the same extent as, in the CHL, if there is a player who deserves exceptional status, then bring them up into the professional leagues in North America. Why not? And I think, when I think about how players will choose to go forward with their development, what keeps a kid from deciding that the CHL isn't for him and he's going to go to the States and he's going to play NCAA hockey, get an NIL deal. He's going to make money. He's going to have freedom to, if he doesn't make his squad in the league, then he goes back down. But it's not a matter of, you have a one-way ticket to the CHL if it doesn't work out. So I love this. I'm going to right swipe it because I think somebody else is going to hit me with something good this month, but it just makes sense.
Jeremy, I think your Jordan Dumais is showing.
Yeah. I mean like that. I mean like, come on, right? Like, I mean like if that kid doesn't make the Jackets next year, I mean, he's putting up just obscene numbers in the queue this year. And yet, he could be told, hey, buddy, you can't play professional hockey in North America. I would love to cover him in Cleveland.
Just for those that aren't aware, so Jordan Dumais was a third round 2022 pick, number 96 by the Blue Jackets this year with the Halifax Mooseheads. 24 games played, okay? 19 goals, 35 assists for 54 points. He's putting up just over 2 points a game.
I mean, like, when you're put on a list and the guy whose name is above you is Sidney Crosby, good list. Mad decent list. But, yes. And I mean, like, and then you look at, like, the Shane Wright thing. It's being totally mismanaged right now by every power that be. And if you have the – if you do what Andrew's suggesting, you don't lose out on this kid's development. Sorry, I'm like going on a little bit of a rant here, but I feel very passionately about this one, Andrew.
Okay. So I initially talked with Andrew about this a little bit off air. And, you know, I was all for it. And you know what? I seen Wright kind of light it up. And that was the initial, like, okay, this is the guy. This is it. Like, this has opened up the floodgates to something that be. Right, I think back to New York, what was it, a couple of years back, where they actually had Q starters because they just ran out of – or Vegas. They ran out of just goalies, right? And so I kind of thought about that. And then you also had to think about the CHL rules, okay? CHL rules only allow a maximum of 3 20-year-old players on their roster. And I think that that is the big key that we need to remember here when we're talking about players – being on the team or not being on the team. And that's brought in place so that the younger guys can get in, because it's a very competitive team, like, to get on these teams, right? You also have to think only people in Atlantic Canada can get in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Only those in Ontario can get in the OHL, and the Prairies are kind of different. And it depends on if you get that split residency somewhere, but that's pretty well the way it is. I'm going to swipe left on this principle, because this opens up the gates for, okay, well, if these guys want to get – if you give them the choice, which you're basically going to have to, if they want to play in the AHL or OHL, the CHL, they're going to pick the AHL because they're going to get some kind of kickback, some money, some actual dollars besides what these honorariums are being offered up, if they are even being offered up, right? So this is kind of the dilemma now for the AHL. You know, it's a tough one, and it's a very, very soft left. But I will say this, there's a lot of hungry players who want to get a crack at the OHL, the CHL, whatever it be. This opens that up, but this also opens up another hole as well. So you're stepping in a muddle puddle right now, and it doesn't look good.
All right, I'm going to talk about special teams. Yeah, you guys have heard it all before. Special teams are important. They can make or break a season. So cliche, right? Well, I want to talk about which one between the penalty kill and the power play is more important. If you had to focus on one, which one are you going to focus on? So my take is that the power play is even more important than a strong PK. Okay. Why? Look at the standings here. So the top five teams in the league in power play percentage: Cleveland, Toronto, Calgary, Belleville, Bridgeport. Okay. Look at those top two teams there, Cleveland and Toronto. Toronto's eighth in the league, and Cleveland is, well, you know, they're 17, but in their division, they're at the top, okay? There's an anomaly there with, you know, Belleville. We're not going to talk about them. But the Bridgeport Islanders, third in the league, all right? Meanwhile, if you go and look at the top penalty kill units, all right, you have San Jose. Yeah, fair, okay. They're 14th. And then you have Hershey. Okay, fair. Yeah, they're number two. Listen to these next ones, though. Chicago, 30th in the league overall in the standings. Henderson, dead last. San Diego, 31st. Having a strong PK isn't necessarily a predictor of success, especially if you look at the three bottom teams in the league. May have a good power play, but it's not winning them games. The other squads, you know, strong penalty kill, they're winning games. So special teams, focus on one, or power play in my mind.
Now, when you're talking about making or breaking a season, is this just regular or post? Because
just regular.
Okay. Then I can give you a soft right swipe, because as I look up in the stats, I see creeping up in there at number 8. Oh, hey, who's down there? Oh, that's the under 500 Grand Rapids Griffins. And now, to be fair, they are also saddled up with not the best PK. And it's at the end of the day, you need a mixture of both. Chicago's got a great PK, but they can't score it's a PG podcast, so I won't go there, but they can't score. And it makes it a little more difficult. Plus they have Max Lajoie, who's the best penalty killer in the league. Don't at me, but he is. And it's a little misleading here and there. And I see where you're coming from. I'll give you the right swipe if we're not going to look at Grand Rapids. And I will say that over the course of a 72-game season, you got to take advantage of your opportunities. Oh, and the teams at the top, they know how to do it.
I think the thing that makes this such a hard concept in the AHL right now is that with just how much these teams play one another within their divisions, you look at the penalty kill numbers, right, for this season. Top three in the North right now: Toronto, Rochester, and Cleveland. 27th, 28th, and 30th in the league in penalty kill. Absolutely abysmal. Cleveland sitting at a whopping 68.5% on the penalty kill, folks. I mean, like, that is bad. Like, you're telling me that when an opposing team has a power play, they're scoring 31.5% of the time? Oh my gosh. But of course, these teams are compensating with goals of their own, because then they're there, at the top of our power play list. And so I think it's hard to conceptualize this as is. I think, you know, there are a lot of misconceptions about the penalty kill, just like about how you throw out your grinders and just hope for the best. I think the strategy, I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk about the fact that a penalty kill is actually way more about skill than you'd ever think. It's way more about skill than even a power play can be sometimes. And so, you know, I think obviously scoring goals is always an indicator of success. So I think obviously, you know, scoring on the power play is definitely going to lead to some good things. And, you know, I, for that reason, I'm going to swipe right. It's a soft swipe right, because I think that it's a little bit more, I think it's probably a little bit more antiquated in some ways, but I think your point is well received. If you have a good power play, you're probably going to be fine.
Okay. So I'm a lot in line with Jeremy on this one. And I'm a firm believer that a strong penalty kill is a strong team. And I say that because I'm a believer that a penalty kill is very much like a chess match. And this is because you have four players against five. You're always going to be outmanned. And so where you kind of position those players within the box is pretty key and critical, right? And so I think that's kind of where I look at, you know, if you have a strong penalty kill, you know, obviously the penalty kill is a way – you're outside of your zone for 2 minutes, right? Like, there's just no doubt about it. The chances of you scoring shorthanded are very slim, right? But I will say this, you know, when a team is able to kill a penalty, I find there's a lot of momentum involved with that too. And I think that that's where that kind of carries. It says a lot about your defense. It says about how well that they can cover that extra man. Some people are even going with power plays now that only have one defender. Right. And so this is where, you know, you have to kind of be a little bit creative in that. And it says a lot about your goaltending as well. When you have a terrible PK, that shows to me that you have an A, bad defense, and you have a goaltender who's not necessarily there to help you, right? And if you're in Game 7 of the Calder Cup Finals and there's 3 minutes left to go, you need a big one from your defense. And if you don't have a good defensive penalty kill, it's hard. So I'm going to swipe left on that premise, but I can be easily swayed over with some Tinder gold. So hit me up again.
I feel like I just got like the most gentle letdown in all of history. It was like so kind. I see where you're going. I see where we have some chemistry. However, but hit me up again.
I'm not feeling a spark.
Yeah. Like we could maybe be friends.
That third picture you had was great. And I seen that you had like a Nelson Mandela quote and that's awesome. And like your Spotify matches up, but I don't know if your mantra's just there yet.
Okay, are you just like coming up with these on the fly or were you actually reading my DMs?
I know, it sounds like way too on the head for that to not be any amount of personal experience.
No comment.
Taking the diplomatic way out.
correct. Well, I kind of on the same, you know, I just got done talking about Cleveland a little bit, just having absolutely abysmal penalty kill numbers. And for me, when I look at the current scoring within the league, right, Cleveland sits in the top five. They're putting it away. They've got 68 goals for to this point, but they've got 67 goals against, which is also in the bottom five of the league. So my hot take, especially given just the insane amount of call-ups that they've faced in the last 3 weeks, courtesy of the Columbus Broken Jackets, this team, I could see having real potential to finish in the top five of goal scoring and in the top five, or bottom five, I should say, goals against.
So it's going to be Rochester 2.0?
Yeah, I think maybe Cleveland is going to get the off the beat this year.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's got to have something to do with that. I mean, yeah, you've seen Kirill Marchenko, Trefix Wansky, Carson Meyer. There was another name that's just flown over my head. Emil Bengtsson when he was down there. I mean, there's been so much talent on that Monsters team that can put the puck in the net. And on the flip side, you know, Daniil Tarasov has been bouncing back and forth. You don't really know. It's so much of that blue line's been decimated from call-ups. And I feel like it's going to be a shootout in the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse just about in every time that the Monsters are coming into action. So, yeah, I think I'm liking what's going on here. I'm going to swipe right.
I mean, right now, I mean, Jeremy alluded to the Broken Jackets or the Black and Blue Jackets, however you want to refer to them as. But they've been able to manage their offensive power quite well. We've seen them, you know, recently, I believe it was either earlier today on Tuesday or on Monday, I forget which one, but they, you know, sent Brendan Gaunce back down to give him some more playing time in Cleveland. You know, at one point, Emil Bemstrom was up and then he went back down. So then Columbus recalled Trefix Wolanski and then they called up Carson Meyer, but they've been kind of moving guys kind of interchangeably, like, okay, we're going to get you a few NHL games, send you back down to help Cleveland. Cause you know, Cleveland could be playing for something very special this year. The problem is goaltending. It's very lean right now. You have Jack Greaves, which is, you know, I believe in his second pro year. And then you have Pavel Chayon, who is in his first pro season. I think they were relying on Daniil Tarasov to be down a little bit more, but up in Columbus, you have, at one point, Jonas Korpisalo was injured. Then you had Elvis Merzlikens get injured. So, of course, he's up there. So that leaves the goaltending very lean, very green. But as long as, knock on wood, no more injuries happen at any level of this organization, I think GM Jorma Kekäläinen is doing a great job in managing the situation ahead of him. I could definitely see Jeremy's scenario happening because they're just managing it perfectly. They're scoring the goals. They're scoring enough, even though they're letting up way too many goals a game. They're scoring enough to still get them in the win column, to still at least get them the loser point. That young crew is just grinding it out. I love it. I can't super swipe on the very first episode, but very, very strong, emphatic right swipe.
So deep down, initially I was like, swipe left, like insta. Okay. But then I had to think of this weekend when I watched and covered the game between the Marlies and the Monsters. I'm not on the Jet Greaves train yet, but they stopped a powerful Toronto team this past weekend. And that's saying something. I will give you the swipe on the condition that they have some players that can play hockey in January, that can play hockey in February. Otherwise, this ain't happening. The Jet Greaves train, it's there. He can provide a couple wins every now and again, evident this past weekend. As long as he can kind of do that and they get some players back, then all for it, right? But if he can't get players back, it's not going to happen, right? So I'm going to swipe right, but I'm hoping that you can keep to your word and actually get some players back, because that would be a strong team in the North Division.
At least send them up for the outdoor game in March. Make that fun.
Correct.
Okay. So speaking of teams that aren't so good, okay, me and Andrew had a little talk today. Okay. We talked about the little Red Wings dilemma. Okay. And I'm going to read you some stats. Okay. Andrew touched on a little bit on these. Grand Rapids, number 30 in shots for. Grand Rapids, number 32 in goals against, a 4.06 goals per game. Giovanni Smith is number 928 in the league for plus minus at minus 13. That's good for second last of all players. Victor Bradstrom is the second worst goals against average in the American Hockey League. That's good for 58th at 4.05. And he's also third last in save percentage in the league at 0.874. And you know what? I'm going to say this here. I think that the Detroit prospect pool is gone. I don't think that there's anything left to it. Grand Rapids was great because, they had some head coaches in Detroit that didn't really favor the prospects all so much. My swipe is simple. I think that Detroit has one of the worst prospect systems in the AHL, and prove me wrong.
I'm deferring to Andrew on this.
Yeah, I'm nervous. I'm like, Dina, can you move me? I'm feeling a little uncomfortable being like kind of like in between these two.
No matter where you go, you're in between them, my friend.
No, put them both down on the bottom or at the top. So,
get me out of this. We'll just sit here and watch.
So a lot of Detroit's young talent is really just kind of getting into their first AHL action. Albert Johansson, Emil Vairo coming over from Europe and making their North American debut. Simon Edvinson, I don't know if you ever heard that guy. He was just once upon a time 6 overall pick. Cross Hannes was another kid who's just turned 20 years old, just making his pro debut, and has kind of been turning heads. I get that this is a very rough around the edges team. A couple weeks into the season, they lose their entire first forward line up to Detroit and call-ups. To talk about, your best prospect in Jonathan Berggren has gone up to Detroit, and all he's done is make plays every time he touches the puck in the big leagues. I don't know if we'll ever see him again in Grand Rapids, which makes me real sad on the beat. But just having him as one of our first guests on the pod, now seeing him succeed up there, you got to kind of feel a little warm inside. Their goaltending has been I'll get into it definitely later on in the episode, but it's not been great. Bradstrom He had his struggles at the beginning of the season last year. Turned it around when he was kind of called upon to be the guy when Picker got called up to Detroit. And he's kind of fallen back into some bad habits here. The team hasn't really helped him out a whole lot, but Yussi Okanjura is another guy who we expected bigger things, I think, when Detroit brought him in, because coming off an Olympic gold performance, he has several seasons over in Europe. You figure this is a guy who's gonna, you know, dial it in and battle for that crease, and it's just not been there. And I think it's between the young team, and just, I don't know what it is in the Nets. If it's all between the head, that's not great. But if you're going to call it the worst prospect pool in the AHL, I can point you out to a couple other teams. They're not there yet, but I think when you look at a couple of those names, they're going to be some solid producers for the Wings in years' time. It's going to take. They're not going to come and light it up immediately. But so on that, if you were going to go to the goaltending, you're going to have my swipe. But then I started reading some of those red flags in your profile, and I'm like, I've seen better, or I guess in this take, worse elsewhere. So you're going to left swipe for me.
Can I just say one word and then give my swipe?
I think I know what that word's going to be.
Henderson, left swipe. Yeah. We just talked about it last week.
And I'm not denying that. That's why I'm kind of like one of the worst, right? We talked about it last week. We don't need to open up this can of worms again, right?
Right.
Henderson, I'm saying that Grand Rapids is bad, acknowledging that Henderson is a thing.
I mean, I don't feel nearly as qualified as Andrew in giving a thorough analysis of that. Just for clarity, though, we're talking like AHL prospect pool, right?
AHL, okay. Right. Yeah, they have a great NHL look right now.
Because I'm thinking about all the guys who are up there right now just for the sake. And that's the other thing, too, right? I mean, like, Grand Rapids prospect pool gets a little bit better once Detroit gets fully healthy, right? Like, that's the other piece of this, too. Like, I think in a totally healthy year for the Red Wings, I don't know that you could make that statement. I think that has depleted the Griffins quite a bit with players like, you know, friend of the pod, Jonathan Bergeron, being up for as long as he was. And so, like, I tend to think that one of the worst, yeah, currently, yes, I have to give you a right swipe because that is what your profile said. But there are some things that could change quickly that could alter that.
Sure.
I would just say I was angry enough at the first, or I guess I shouldn't say angry, displeased by the first picture. I didn't even bother to read fully into it. I could have given you a right swipe had I not focused on the worst and forgot the one of.
that's Tinder in a nutshell.
I learn more and more about it every single day.
You got the hot takes, and now we're going to move on to our special guest of the week. Hailing from Detroit, Michigan, our guest recently made his AHL debut this season with the San Jose Barracuda after putting up 12 points in 12 games with the ECHL Cincinnati Cyclones. Former Arizona Coyotes prospect, he also spent parts of three seasons with the Tucson Roadrunners after an OHL career where he racked up 104 points in 169 games between Oshawa and the Flint Firebirds, all from the blue line, not bad. After spending the 21-22 season in Germany, he's back in business in the States, and he's here with us tonight on the Holy Grail. Ladies and gentlemen, we introduce Jalen Smerik to the pod. All right. Thanks for coming out, Jalen.
How you doing? How's everyone doing?
Doing good. Doing real good. All right. You got the time for the... All right. All right. So I want to start this one by kind of rolling the clock back here, Jalen. Your brother Joe played youth hockey with my cousin Chris way back in the day. And I think I remember you maybe... 11 years old, kind of sitting around and taping the sticks for the whole team in the pregame. And now here you are. Do you remember that, you know, those kind of memories, and, you know, why we got you here,
yeah.
Perhaps the best memories of your youth hockey days following, you know, in your brother's footsteps.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that was the year that was summoned, right?
They made it all the way into nationals and lost.
It wasn't nationals. I think it was states or one of the tourneys. I was in, like, I went on the ice and I was actually in one of the team pitchers. I'm just like this little guy in the back. I think I have my like Cookie Monster hat on, something like that. Elmo hat. It was like a sick. It was one of my favorite hats back then.
Oh my god!
It's just hilarious. It's like you see everyone dressed up, coaches, and then you just see like this little kid just poking his head in the pitcher in the back. Like, it's hilarious. But yeah, no, I definitely remember taping. I don't know. I'd probably tape 10 sticks a day for the boys. Just love to be around.
That's awesome. So yeah, now you're here in your fifth full pro season. You know, for a lot of that, you've been, you know, on the road either just because of the typical pro hockey schedule or because of a call up, you know, and with the young family now, I mean, can you talk a bit about how you kind of balance out your family and your work life?
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, just try to keep in touch with the kids as much as I can. Talk to them as much as I can when I'm on the road. My family, my mom, my dad, and my sister, big helpers, and, you know, they take care of them for me. I just try to make sure I can, you know, take a little time off their hands and talk to them on the phone, even though they don't really like talking on the phone. They're like, because sometimes, you know, they have to answer on the iPad and they're like, nah, I'd rather play my game than talk to dad, you know what I mean? But yeah, I just try to call them as much as I can. I think, you know, that's the biggest thing when you're on the road and, you know, you're living this life. So it's good.
So how old are your kids?
They're five. I have a twin boy and girl.
Depression.
That's awesome. Jalen, you're now skating for your second AHL team. You had 67 games with the Tucson Roadrunners. And if I remember the stat that I read correctly, it was over the first five seasons of their existence. And now you're with the San Jose Barracuda on a tryout. How was your time with Roadrunners? And do you have any stories that our listeners would like to hear about?
My time was, just a learning experience, I guess. I was thankful for the opportunity. Like you said, over, you know, 5 years or five seasons, obviously 67 games isn't a lot. But, you know, I was just thankful to be there when I was there and, thankful to be able to, build, you know, relationships with some of the guys that were there and, you know, be a part of, you know, an organization like that. And, like I said, I think the main thing was just building relationships and just being in a great place like Tucson. It's a great city. It's a great place to play. Story-wise, I don't know. Nothing I could think of off the top of my head right now. Nothing PG-13, at least.
I get that.
Keep this one kid friendly here for the time being. So, you know, we speak a lot with a couple guys who come in between the coast and the AHL, and, you know, a lot of them kind of say the big difference is in the speed that plays are made and decision making. What have you really noticed on your end, kind of the difference in between the two leagues?
I would definitely say, you know, speed is the number one thing. I think for me, it's an easier transition. It's definitely an easier game, you know, just with my kind of style of play and, you know, just me being a puck possession defenseman, you know, just knowing that you're going to have those guys in those spots and, you know, knowing that those guys are going to be talking to you, you know, and just knowing that they're, you know, everyone's, you know, going to be where you need them to be. Like I said, it just makes the game a lot easier.
Jalen, you're off to a great start so far. One game played, one assist. Seems like it's off to a great start so far. We recently had Thomas Bordeleau on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and it seems like a really tight-knit group out there. What can you tell us about them as, you know, kind of the newest guy on the block here, so to speak?
I think it's a great group of guys. You know, we have a really good group in Cincinnati, and, you know, everyone's been getting along well so far. And, you know, just coming here, there's really been no change. It's kind of like, you know, I'm still with the same guys. I came in on Saturday, and, you know, within 2 hours before the game even started, you know, I felt like, you know, I was one of the boys, and, you know, they gave me a warm welcome, which, you know, made it a lot easier for me out there on the ice and just being comfortable to play my game and, you know, be a part and play my role.
Now, I know this is an AHL podcast, but I'm going to kind of bring up Cincinnati and the Cyclones here a little bit, and just to kind of pull on one of their recent theme nights that I went down to cover in Cincinnati, the shutout, the hate night. Now, after the game, I talked with Coach Jason Payne, which I know you've had a bit of a relationship with him before you even started playing with the Cyclones. And I also talked with Josh Burnside, and they shared a lot of messages about accepting people as they come, and especially Coach Payne, just about providing resources and a platform to those who may not be able to otherwise participate in the game of hockey. Coming from Detroit, can you just kind of share your thoughts about the Cyclones and their organization and those messages shared by Jason and Josh?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, as in today's generation, it's kind of a bigger thing, and it's something that, you know, we're really working on, you know, and I, you know, I think it's great. Be who you want to be, and ELE, Jackie Moon, everybody love everybody. You know, and I think it's just, you know, great. And it makes the world a better place when no one's feeling left out, no one's getting made fun of, or, you know, they can be who they want to be. And, you know, everyone feels comfortable in the skin that they're in. And it doesn't matter what color skin they, you know, have, or what they're wearing, or whatever the case may be. You know, you're judged off your personality and your character. And, you know, I just think, you know, what we did there in Cincinnati, and the message that, you know, Josh and Coach Payne gave there, just goes to show why, you know, I've built the relationship with those two people, you know, and just what the people in Cincinnati, you know, Coach Payne preaches that kind of stuff. And, you know, he enforces that, well, not enforces, but he, you know, he puts that, you know, that's how he, you know, kind of builds us, you know, and that's, you know, we're men, but at the same time, you know, we're all still learning. You know, we got older guys, we got younger guys, you know, everyone hasn't seen everything in the world. So, you know, you can always learn. And, you know, that's one thing that I could say about Painter. He's a great teacher. He'll take all the time out of his day if he has to teach you if you're willing to learn. And, you know, just the message of shutting out the hate was just huge. And I think the jerseys were great. I think the jerseys were awesome. And I was happy to have such a successful night.
And one thing that kind of following up on that Coach Payne said is not that hockey is for everyone, but let's work to make hockey for everyone. Really talking about opening it up to everyone, boys, girls. This is a direct quote. Doesn't matter who you are, open it up to everybody. Give them an opportunity to play the game. And talking about, you know, just the expense to come into the sport, just in your mind, and he already shared his viewpoints on this, but is there anything else that you feel that pro hockey organizations, players, or even fans could possibly do to advocate or encourage more inclusion in the game?
I mean, it all starts with just I don't think hockey's really advertised very well. You know, it's put out in, you know, a few communities or neighborhoods or suburbs, whatever you want to call it. But as far as kind of going in deep and like, for instance, like in Detroit where I'm from, like, no one really knows much about hockey. There's no one in the city of Detroit teaching or trying to, you know, teach kids about hockey. You know, my good friend Jason McCrimmon actually has one of the only programs that I really know of in Detroit for kids, called Detroit Ice Dreams. You know, and it just gives kids a chance to play hockey for free, full equipment covered. And, he's been working with the Red Wings, and, you know, he does, he gets, you know, a kid or two, I think every home game, and, you know, takes them down and they get to go to the rink and go to the store and everything and kind of see the locker room, and they get to experience their first hockey game. And, you know, things like that are like, just great to see. So, I mean, for me, I just think if, you know, it's advertised in more cities and, you know, we can start donating more. To give some of these kids who can't, or some of these, you know, some of these kids who can't afford it, or their parents can't afford it, just a chance to just experience the game, you know, and me being from Detroit and kind of building my own nonprofit now, I, you know, trying to gather money to just get the kids on the ice is what I'm doing now, and eventually, hopefully, down the line, I can get some equipment donated and gather some funds for that, just to kind of teach kids the game myself and make sure they are fully geared, instead of just, you know, being able to rent skates and going out there and skating around. They can actually go play the game of hockey and learn more about the game. So,
well, that set up my next question perfectly, because I did want to ask you about your nonprofit. You know, I've looked at some other interviews you've done about it, and it looks like you're going out in the community, passing out food, clothes, and then going and working with kids, teaching them about sports. So I just wanted to know if you could kind of tell us a little bit more about it and let us know if our listeners wanted to donate or somehow get involved, how they could do that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just all started summer, like 2017, 2018. My buddy called me and he was just like, I'm feeling blessed today. You know, I want to bless some other people of, you know, less fortunate. You know, and I was like, all right, well, I think we could, you know, go out and kind of just make sandwiches and go pass them out. Excuse me. So it kind of just started from there. And I worked at a daycare when I was younger, and, you know, my old baseball coach ran the daycare. So, you know, just my relationship and my dedication to the game of hockey and, you know, me having that relationship with him, you know, he just, you know, we talked about it. And he was like, hey man, like, you know, these kids come to my summer camp and, you know, they're learning different things. They got basketball program. They're learning about arts and crafts and, you know, different things of that nature that you, you know, you learn about in the summer. He's like, hey, like, what if we can, you know, introduce them to hockey and kind of teach them hockey. And I was like, yeah, like, I'd love to do that. And, you know, like I said, just me working there before, and kind of being around that environment since, you know, I worked there in, I think, 10th or 11th grade, was just an easy transformation for me to just kind of go in there and, you know, introduce myself to the kids and teach them about hockey. And, you know, one thing turned to another, you know, next thing I know, I was feeding the less fortunate and, you know, passing out clothes and everything. And at the same time, I was trying to, you know, introduce kids to hockey. So I said, hey, like, I probably should put this all together and make a nonprofit. I think, like, you know, this is something that I love doing, something that I take pride in, you know, and I just love especially seeing the faces on the kids when they learn to skate. It's great because, you know, when you first tell them about it, or like my last time I took them to skate before I came and left for the season, you know, kids were like, "What? We're going ice skating?" And then they get in the rink and they're like, "No, I'm not going out there. It's too cold." I'm like, just give it a chance, like 5-10 minutes. Come on, please, for me. And they're like, all right, I'll try it out. And before the end of it, you know, they're like, "Can we stay out longer? Like, we only have an hour." And then, you know, you get off and you're untying their skates and they're about to go home. And I said, "Hey, when's the next one?" And you're like, "Wow, like this is great. This is, you know, this is why I do it." And, you know, and the same thing, you know, feeding the less fortunate and just getting out there and talking to them, you know, like that's just great. Keeps you humble, keeps you in a great spot. And just hearing some of the stories, and, you know, they don't really have anyone to talk to. You know, a lot of people look down on them or talk down about them, talk bad about them. You know, so just giving them someone to talk to, and, you know, just a conversation, whether it's 2 minutes or 20 minutes, it's a bright spot in their day. And, you know, just giving them some food and some shelter or some clothing is just, you know, another bright spot in their day, and, you know, something that they don't, you know, they don't see often or get often. You know, and if anyone's ever looking to donate or help out, I can be reached on, you know, any one of my social medias. I'm always looking out for that. And, you know, I have a Venmo account for, you know, any donations or anything like that. So.
Okay. Awesome. And then we'll go ahead in our show notes too and put links to all those in case anybody does want to donate to that. But I think that's one of the great things about giving of your time and your resources. I mean, I know I've volunteered with a free medical clinic in my hometown for uninsured, underinsured people. And it's, you get out so much just by putting into your time. It's just, it helps your soul. It just helps you feel, or it just makes you feel so good for doing it whenever it's the other people that are really benefiting, but you do too as a volunteer.
Yes, for sure. I agree. Like I said, and I tell this story all the time, like, it really amazes me. You know, I was going out, me and my buddies were out one day, and we were talking to a guy. We gave him some food, and he's like, "Hey, like, you got a couple dollars?" Or no, actually, he didn't even ask for money. He goes, we asked him, like, "Where do you go when it rains?" Or, you know, anything like that. He's like, "Oh, like, I usually like to try to walk down to the Walmart and go behind the building and get underneath the shed, or, you know, the roof, whatever." And I was like, "The Walmart, man, like, what do you," it's like, "Dude, that's like 3 miles away, man." Like, so I was like, "No, like, all right, like, if it rains, you know, this time you're going to catch the bus. Here's," I think we gave him like $20 or something like that. Like, and he's like, and after we gave him $20, he goes, "Wow, man, thank you. This is great." He goes, "Hey, what do you say? Did the Tigers win today?" And we're like, "What? The Tigers?" I was like, "Dude, how do you keep up with that? Like, you have no phone, no nothing. You know what I mean?" He's like, "Yeah, like, I know they won yesterday, but I didn't get a chance to see the score today." I was like, "Oh, wow, dude. Like, this is like you're more caught up on, you know, things that, you know, I didn't even know that you could, you know, really had a chance to know about." So it was like crazy for me to kind of hear that. And I was just like, "Wow, man, like, I really wish I could just, you know, gather everyone up in my city of, you know, less fortunate or who's never been to a Tigers game and just take them, you know, or any sporting event, just to kind of feel that, give them that experience and feel that love." You know, it's just something that you can't compare. And it's a great feeling.
Absolutely. And as we kind of wind down our chat here, you know, I love hearing these stories of you giving back to the community and everything. It's fantastic. And just kind of one of the last things that we can ask you here, you know, for those kids that are out there that are struggling, that, you know, that they want to keep up with that dream, they maybe can't, you know, they're finding in a tough spot in life right now. What advice would you give to those kids around the community, around, you know, around the whole hockey world, that that are struggling with that right now?
I mean, for the most part, just, you know, stick with it. You know, it can get rough at times, but, you know, I think the best part about it and the thing that kept me in the sport of hockey the most was, just traveling all over the world and just building friendships. You know, in hockey, I've made some bonds, you know, that are a lifetime. You know, I still got guys that I talk to from when, you know, I started novice hockey. I still got guys that I talk to from when I started the OHL or, you know, whatever the case may be, throughout my whole entire career from the time I was, you know, 5 or 6 when I, you know, met Dom, until now. So, you know, it's just, hockey's just one of those sports where it's just, it's a small world. Everyone knows everyone. And, you know, and mm-hmm. now I'm here in San Jose and I'm meeting people and, you know, I'm meeting the guys and they're like, hey, you know this guy? And I'm like, yeah, you know this guy? And, you know, you're like, yeah, like good buddy of mine. So it's just great. Like, you know, like I said, things can get rough at times, you know, and some things can kind of push you away from the sport, but, if you stick with it and you don't let those things bother you or really get to you, you can find, you know, a real love for this sport and for this game. You know, and I just hope that, you know, there's something that I could do down the line to where that, you know, no one has to go through these things and we don't have to worry about the color of your skin or, you know, your race or your culture or whatever the case may be. ELE, everyone can just love everyone. So.
All right. And finally, we ask all the players a question this come on in this podcast here. And we need to know your pick. If you had to pick your own goal song, which one would you choose?
Goal song. I don't know, man. That's tough.
Put you on the spot with this one.
I don't know, man. Like, I'm not like a big – I feel like most of them were like country or like rock or something like that. And I feel like I'd throw like a nasty, mean curve in there and just – go with like some straight rap and just I don't even know.
That'd be good though. That'd be good.
Yeah, it would be. I think you know hockey needs a little bit more flavor. I think that's one of the things that really lack in the sport. But I don't know. I would definitely throw a rap song out there. I can place my head on one right now. probably some Drake, honestly. Drake's like this day and age, Drake's probably like the most known, like biggest, you know, rapper there is. So probably some Drake, throw some Drake in there. And
if you want to talk about advertising the game, I mean, that's one of the big names, go ahead and do it. So anyway, again, Jalen, we can't thank you enough for coming on here and sharing your stories and sharing your passion and love for the game. It's, you know, I honestly, it's been an honor for us to have just a quick couple minutes of your time.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. It was great to chat with you guys.
And of course, like we just said, if you are looking to donate to Jalen's nonprofit or to help with any of his efforts, we will be putting links down to all of his social media in our show notes. So please feel free to reach out to him and donate to these amazing causes and this amazing work that he is putting together for the youth of Detroit. So we're going to go ahead and move on to the who's hot and who's not. Who's hot or who's not in the Atlantic Division? Well, in previous weeks, I've looked at unlikely sources for my who's hot. Now that I'm looking at the Atlantic Division, that's not going to change. I'd like to direct your attention to the Springfield Thunderbirds and Matthew Highmore in a season where they are truly struggling. Matthew Highmore is a real bright spot. Currently 11th in the league for points. Currently the highest in the Atlantic Division in the points race. 19 games played, 4 goals, 16 assists. Plus, he is fresh off of a 10-game point streak where he tallied 15 of those points. That went from October 15th to November 23rd. But not I hate to say it, but how much more are we allowed to pick on Hartford here?
I think there's plenty of room.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I
think the Barracuda would have something to say if we limited the amount of time we talked about the Wolfpack. I think I feel like we have to be equal opportunity here.
Fair. All right. Well, the Wolfpack last in the Atlantic, 0-2-0-1 streak currently. And in their last 10, 3-4-0-3. Currently, they're 28th in the league. I mean, I'm just going to present that without too much further comment. It's rough for them right now. Started last season, just never got better.
Oh man, it's been downhill ever since.
Yeah, they kept it going. That is not the spot you want to plateau in, without a doubt. it's actually more of a valley than a plateau, wouldn't you say? But I digress. As we look at the North, trying to avoid any amount of beat bias here, who's hot? It's got to be Cleveland. I mean, like Zach mentioned earlier, the past weekend in Toronto, coupled with the fact that they just quite simply are down so many men right now, right? I mean, if we take a look at the people or the players, especially who are up in Columbus or have spent some considerable time in Columbus and have been taken away from the Monsters, you know, Trey Fix-Wolanski, who is still, like, even after missing a little over a week of action so far in the A, still sits in the top five in scoring. And then you've got players like, you know, we alluded to Carson Meyer being called up right now. And then Emil Bemström has been up and down for the Monsters. And then you look at the blue line. I mean, Billy Sweezy is called up, and he's thankfully been sent back down for the sake of the Monsters. But Tim Burney was also sent up to Columbus, which, good on all these guys for getting their chance. They're guys that I know Dina would agree deserve their chances. But all of that is to say, my gosh, I don't know how Cleveland is making it happen. They've gotten points in 8 of their last 10. They are just – they're kicking it up a notch, and they're taking the next man up mentality to a whole new level. Vogelhuber has that team really clicking on all cylinders right now, no matter who's in the lineup. And then when we look at who's not hot, I think, like, again, at the fear of being redundant – hard to not look at Laval, but I'm going to call out something very specifically, and that is the goaltending, and that is just the overall performance of the blue line. And through a whopping 20 games, the Rocket have given up 79 goals in 20 games. 79. It is really, really not the year to be a Rocket goaltender. Caden Primo has struggled. Kevin Poulin has struggled. And it's just a challenge left and right for this team to – and that is not strictly a representation of the goaltending alone. We all know that doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's everything in Laval. The goaltending and the defense have to be better if they even want to have a respectable showing this year.
Can we just say ouch?
Yes. Yeah, we can.
And so I just want to go in with my hot and kind of going back to those Griffins goalies. But I'm going to go with someone we were just kind of ragging on for a little bit here, and that's Juuse Okanjura, because on Friday, Okanjura made 26 saves for his first shutout in North America since 2013 when he was in Zach's backyard over there in St. John's. Now, you know, it's not like he's been in the AHL the whole time. I mean, I know he's had some struggles, but, like, again, he was over in Europe for a while. But, for a guy who really hasn't had the best numbers this year, shout out to him who's been struggling. And finally, hopefully he's kind of broken through and can at least get, like, all right, you got that one behind you. You know you can do it. All these 4, 5, 6 goal games, you know, you got a donut in there. He's feeling it. He's hot. And not, I'm going to keep going back to him until they stop me. That's the Chicago Wolves. It's not the 21-22 season anymore. And last year, the Wolves never lost 2 straight games in regulation at any point in the season. 76 games, they might have lost in regulation and lost in overtime, but there were never 2 games, boom, boom, regulation losses. They've already done it 3 times this year, and they're on a 3-game regulation losing streak right now. It's a different team. It's a different vibe with the Wolves, and they are pretty not.
And you know what? In the Pacific Division, one player who's been playing like he's been playing in his backyard, it's got to be Shane Wright. And you know what? That's going to be my hot for this week. I mean, you look at some of his goals that he had over the weekend. I mean, they speak for themselves. He's walking, waltzing right in. 4 goals in through the 3 games. No doubt about it. He's my player who's just been absolutely hot. Need I explain any more? If he stays down there, I'm excited to see what happens. I know the dream may not be there forever, but if he does stay down for the rest of the season, the imagination is there for anybody. Who's not? I'm going to keep it simple. San Diego. And I'm pushing the alarm bells just temporarily because what I've seen over the past month hasn't really been good. And you know what? They're actually doing worse at this present, like, stretch than Henderson is. So we can't really rag on Henderson if we don't rag on San Diego. I mean, 3 straight losses. The cherry on top was a thrilling 5-2 loss against Henderson. Like we talked about, 19 shots, tough night in net for Dostal. I mean, they've lost it. And I think that we talked about Dostal being such a good key player. Well, when he's struggling, the rest of the team is struggling. And I think that if they're not careful, they're going to end up behind Henderson, which is kind of a tough thing to say, but they're only marginally better than Henderson right now. Points percentage, we don't really talk about it anymore, but if you look at it, it's only 0.16, 0.16 or something, right? So it's 300 and 316. Don't know what else to tell you, right? It's not there for them, and so that's going to be my nod.
So, Andrew, what I'm hearing is it's a good thing I didn't re-roll on UC for my fantasy team here, right? At least for right now.
Yeah, you know what? I'll give that one to you. Yeah, he did take an L the very next day, but it's hard playing 2 games back to back in a single day. Maybe if Grand Rapids had another goalie to go to, well, it'd be a different story.
I will take those shutout points anytime, gladly. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead now that we've talked about kind of individual players, maybe some teams, how they're doing. We're going to look at the standings now in the race for the Holy Grail. Looking at the Atlantic Division, wow, 4 of the top 5 teams in the American Hockey League are hailing from the Atlantic Division. You got Providence, Hershey, Bridgeport going 1, 2, 3. Then you got the Colorado Eagles out in the Western Conference sitting at 4. And then the Charlotte Checkers at number 5. Now, beyond that, there are still some other hot teams. Lehigh Valley winning 6 of their last 8 points in 7 of those games. Wilkes-Barre is threatening for 1 of the top 4 spots. Bridgeport and Hershey are, you know, they're starting to get on fire here with some points and winning streaks. Really, there's only a couple teams like Hartford and Springfield that seem to be really struggling here, but just kind of going top to bottom here. Again, you got Providence, Hershey, Bridgeport, Charlotte, Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, Lehigh Valley, Springfield, and bringing up the rear is the Hartford Wolfpack.
Yeah, and kind of to your point, when you look at the North, the division leading Toronto Marlies would be a whopping 6th in the Atlantic right now if they were there. So, I mean, things in the North really are pretty steady. Things aren't really changing all too much. It seems like we kind of know what we've got here in the North. That being said, Utica gets up to 500. They're a team that I've kind of ragged on a little bit here at the start of the season, wondering what's going on there. But they're at 500 and would be in a playoff spot. They have, more than any team, they've actually only played 15 games so far this season, which, you know, you look around and, you know, 17 for Cleveland, 18 for most of the folks in the league. And then Laval, again, has played a whopping 20 games. Someone send help. But all of that is to say that things are pretty steady here in the North. Again, to reiterate, don't think it's going to be as crazy as it was last year. And I, for one, am okay with that.
And as we move on into the Central, we got the top dog in the Milwaukee Admirals. And if I'm being honest, I don't see them moving a whole lot. I know that they had a couple call-ups with Tomasino and Juuso Parsonen, but this is I look at their lineup and I'm just like, wow, this is a deep team. It's a stacked team. They got high-end talent up and down the lineup. This is I don't think that the Admirals are going to be here to stay up there, but you know, the Texas Stars, don't count them out down there. Number two, playing some really well hockey, in two-game winning streak as of late. But the Manitoba Moose are right there on their heel and actually have the higher winning percentage. I know it's not a thing, and OHL fans don't want to hear that dreaded winning percentage anymore, but it's got a bit of weight to it, especially for teams that have played some less games, which Manitoba has. So don't be surprised to see that shifting along. We go into the meat of the Central. You got the Rockford Ice Hogs and Grand Rapids Griffins. And you got some usual suspects bringing along the rear. And the Iowa Wild, they've kind of fallen back into where we've expected them. And I think at this point we can kind of firmly say that Chicago's planted their anchor and they're going to be living in mama's basement for quite a while, I think.
And in the Pacific Division, high altitude brings out the song, "There Ain't No Mountain High Enough." The Eagles have been soaring this week with a 9-0-1 record through their last 10 games. Heading into this week, they didn't really have the best goals for in the division and hardly the best goals against in the division. And you have to go back 12 games to find a regulation loss for them. And they've been able to do that. Another team that's been able to stay in the saddle are the Wranglers, lassoing their way through November with only 3 losses in that time. Going down the list in the Pacific, Ontario, Tucson, San Jose, Coachella Valley, Baker, and Abbotsford make up the middle. And if you look way down, you'll see a dead goal. Have lost 7 of their past 10 games, only turning things around as of recently are Henderson. But a great stat that Patrick Williams actually tweeted, Henderson's shooting percentage is at near 10%. They score on 1 of every 10 shots. So take that as you will, but 1 out of every 10.
So I'm glad I had my mic muted because I just started singing. you know, that "Ain't No Mountain High Enough." I love the song. We're all good. And then you hit me with the dead seagull. And I'm glad I wasn't drinking my water because I would have choked. That was great.
Zach, there might be some life there at some point.
You are unhinged sometimes, and I love it. But can we just talk real quick? So looking at the overall standings, the two teams that have played 20 games are in the bottom 5. Is it just they're playing so much more often than everybody else, or is it just a fluke, do you think? We're looking at Henderson at 32 in 20 games and then Laval at 29 with 20 games.
I don't know if I call it a fluke. Sometimes you just are what you are, but they're showing us that they have more opportunities to show that. It could be a bit of a condensed schedule thing that, you know, maybe you get a couple more back-to-backs and it's harder to play. I get it. But sometimes you get those extra games, you got to kind of – you got to battle through it. And some teams, they just – that they can handle the adversity better than others, I suppose. I mean, but you can also say that they have more opportunities to get points and they're just not getting them.
Right.
Well, I was going to say in 19 games, Providence has 29 points. So, I mean, it's just like, it's just those teams. I appreciate what you just tried to do for those two teams. I really, truly do. That was really kind of you. However,
Yeah. If you look at 19, you have Providence, you have Charlotte. I mean, you have the Texas Stars, which are over 500. And we're just going to admit the birds here, you know, the Thunderbirds and the Gulls.
So the other side of it, too, is Laval hasn't really traveled a whole lot far. Most of their games have actually been at home, and their home record is god awful terrible. And when I look at Henderson, their road hasn't been incredibly hard either. They haven't had a terrible schedule. Henderson's problem is goaltending, and we talked about generally everything else. They are just generally bad. Otherwise, I you can make the excuse, I guess, but I don't see it.
All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to our game of the week, looking ahead in or looking ahead at the American Hockey League schedule for the next week. And up in the Atlantic Division, I'm going to be keeping an eye on the Providence Bruins this weekend. They are actually going to be going up against two extremely desperate teams back-to-back on Saturday. They'll be facing Springfield at, I'm sorry to do this to you, Zach, 7.05 p.m. on Saturday, and then Hartford at 3.05 p.m. on Sunday. I know you got to say it.
We're not doing this. This is not happening. Not necessary whatsoever.
So, but number one in the Atlantic in the Providence Bruins versus the seventh and eighth teams in the division could actually end up leaving the Bruins a little bit bruised. Can they control the pace, or are they going to play down to their opponent? Now, Springfield does have two shootout results already against Providence this season, actually taking the first of those two contests, which actually happened in back-to-back games. But on the flip side, this is going to be Providence and Hartford's first look at each other. So, yeah, Providence versus Springfield and Hartford on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, and when I look at the North, there's no bigger matchup this weekend than Rochester and Cleveland. They've got a game on Thursday and a game on Saturday. And for these two teams, I mean, they're sitting there at 2-3 in the North. They've already matched up, you know, a couple times this season, and Cleveland has looked really good. Rochester's going to want a little bit of payback. I like to think that this is going to be a really, really good test for both teams to see exactly where they stand in that North division. And I think, you know, good for Cleveland to not have to worry about back-to-backs, especially Dina alluded to the goaltending situation earlier. It's going to be nice to not have to worry about that. And so this one will be on my radar for obvious reasons, but also given the implications of it in the North.
So going on in the Central, when this episode drops, there will be a game being played, a school day game between the Manitoba Moose and the Milwaukee Admirals. But we're going to fast forward for our game of the week for a Saturday matinee between these two same teams. And you just got a couple of heavyweights that play a couple different styles of hockey really well, though. And, I mean, you could just flip a coin between these two. It's going to be incredible hockey. Manitoba, I think they're going to be – I feel like they got a little bit of egg on their face getting shut out by Grand Rapids of all team last weekend. So they're going to – I think they're going to come back. They're going to want to make a statement and just say, you know, I think that they're going to be gunning for that top spot in the division, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Got some lot of talent, some big hits, some big bodies going at it, and some really good goaltending. Look out over there in Winnipeg.
And you know what? Give me Bakersfield and Colorado. Colorado has been hot, but you can't count out Bakersfield. Going back the past 5 years, that series is near split, with three of those games being the difference, all in extra time. And you can't forget that last year Bakersfield actually won the season series against Colorado, who turned out to be a real upset of a team out there who looked really strong. The Condors, they've been looking really good as well. You ask me, though, anybody who tries to get this, to guess this, is really up there with the birds for this game.
Also, if you're looking for the AHL free game of the week, they are offering up on watchtheahl.com. Syracuse and Belleville action kicks off on Friday at, Zach, I'm sorry, 7:05 Eastern time. And again, that is free on AHL TV this Friday.
And if you actually just don't want to watch games at 7:05 like me, you can catch some live AHL action on the Field Pass Hockey app.
Perfect. There you go.
Two teams meeting for the first time in a set between Charlotte and the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Charlotte dominating the season series. Lehigh Valley looking to build off that 8-8 record, which has been a little poor. Our first game matchup is on Friday at a crispy 7 ET. Exactly. Perfect. We are doing this. We are doing this. And the second game, we are live from Charlotte at about 6 ET. Check that out on the Field Pass Hockey app. You can download that on the Google Play Store or the Apple Store.
All right. And Zach is going to keep it rolling for us here as we start to wind down the show in this week's bonus round. I'm a little nervous for this one. I heard someone alluded to a Canadian hockey encyclopedia in our group chat earlier. I'm nervous, but yeah, let's go.
There was a couple of Canadian flags thrown around the group chat, and for good reason, because I hope you were studying up, because there are 13 provinces and territories in Canada, what the U.S. would call states. But I want to know, I have three questions for you. The first is, how many of them have hosted an AHL team? Looking for a number, not specific. I won't hurt you like that.
I'm going to go with, seven.
I'm going to say six.
I might shortchange myself. I was thinking five. But I don't know if I want to go five, because if I go five, then that only puts me at lower than five as a winner. So I'm going to go with,
I think well, Dina said seven first, so I'm going to give seven to her. I'll go six.
Right. I'll go eight given all of that. I'll go eight. We'll go six to eight and hope for the best.
There's actually been nine. The only provinces that haven't are the three territories and Saskatchewan. Believe it or not. I guess my next question, lots of time to redeem, and we'll go closest rules. How many current Canadian players are in the AHL right now? There are roughly 900 players in total. How many of those are Canadian? I didn't count this, don't worry.
Well, they're all in the CHL, so moving on. No, I'm kidding.
Let's go
I had to jump in there.
Well, I was nervous.
435.
I'm going to go a little lower. I'm going to go 350.
Yeah, Andrew snuck in there.
Sorry, I said 483. Yeah, I had to dive in before.
Yep, no. Yeah. There's actually 414, so pretty close.
Not bad.
And I guess this final one, quick maths can kind of help you out with this, but how many games will there be played in Canada this year in the AHL?
Where's my calculator?
3, 2, 1, go.
Is that right? Oh, shoot. But I didn't think about like away games that no.
Oh,
man.
Let's go with.
Did I just spoil your thought?
No, you kind of spoiled my plan.
214.
I'm going to go.
Pure panic in his eyes right now.
Wait, can I change my answer?
No, you're going to have to change all of these answers.
180.
I want to go higher. Can I go 247?
I don't know the answer.
Wait, what?
Well, okay, let's think about it. Let's think
then
about
why'd
it
you ask the question?
No, let's think about it logically. I may be wrong. I might have led you down a rabbit hole that I didn't need to. So if every 76 divided by 2 is 38. Period. Done. Cool. Uh-huh. So
wait, no. That doesn't matter. You just tried to fool me. Never mind.
We're good. It's all good. That's why I said I think I might have led you down a rabbit hole that I feel bad about.
Okay. No. Okay. No.
But there's extra home games because of Coachella Valley.
Oh, good point.
We're not playing in Canada, though.
They're playing mainly in Canada right now.
They're all
or getting, does that count?
They're getting all their away games out of the way.
Oh, so that's not like extra. Okay, so it really would just be as simple as quick math.
Quick math. First one.
We overcomplicated this.
Yeah, all you got to do, I mean, it's just.
I need to go back and figure out what my original answer was.
Melville, Laval, Toronto. That's them, right? I mean, as far as I know. So that's six teams. That's six Canadian teams. Okay. Each of them play 36 home games.
So that's 216.
216.
You got it. 216 games.
Nice.
After that chaos, what just happened?
I went at 180, but apparently I must have missed a franchise.
No, see, Jeremy made a good point, and it could have been worded how many times will a Canadian team play in Canada, right? Which would have been a separate sort of thing. Which would have scared me because
that would have, that would have been more, that would not have been quick math. That's very slow math.
Very, very tedious and terrible math.
Okay, so who actually won that bonus round?
You did. You took the points. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, you had 2 points.
Dang. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Sorry. Leave it to Zach for the chaos. He never fails to deliver, and that's one of my favorite things about him.
It's pure panic.
But it's all good. Well, that's going to be it for the Holy Grail this week. If you'd like to see or hear more of us, please be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. Click like on this video, turn the bell on, all that good stuff. Helps us out with our viewership numbers and helps spread us around to other people who may be interested in AHL hockey. Of course, you can always tune in wherever you listen to your favorite podcast and then follow us over on Twitter at The Holy Grail. You know how it's spelled, GRAHL. You can also check out all of Field Pass Hockey's other podcasts. You have Inside the SPHL with James Hayes. If you're looking for the ECHL, you can join Matthew Harding and Jason Mouse as they break down the ECHL's Wichita Thunder and chat with some of the team's legendary players. The Rolling Thunder podcast airs bi-weekly here at Field Pass Hockey. And then, of course, Syracuse Speaks with Alexander Ackerman. Syracuse Speaks is a Syracuse crunch-centric podcast that focuses on maintaining a balanced perspective in the ever-shifting world of minor league hockey. On behalf of Andrew, Zach, and Jeremy, everyone here at the Holy Grail, we hope you have an amazing week, and we'll see you all next Thursday.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or a topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.
So is Dom your cousin?
Dom's also my cousin. He's Chris and I are cousin. Dom's his age. He's 25, and Chris is a year older than I am. So Yeah, I would always hang around with Chris. We were very close in age. We're almost like brothers. So I was always hanging around with Chris and always hanging around his team, especially, you know, like I said, they were going to nationals at their the midget double A level. Now, I was about to say, I wasn't sure exactly like if that's what they call it anymore or what, but they won states and then they went to nationals. And I went with my grandpa and we drove out there. They had it in Pittsburgh. So we went and drove out there and watched them out there. And they made it all the way to the semifinals. And honestly, they should have won. This goalie was putting Dominic Hasek like performance on him. But I still maintain it was one of the greatest games I've ever seen because so they're down 2-1, despite outshooting them like 45-15 or something. And there's like 6 seconds left. The other team ices the puck. They get a face-off, shoot the puck off the face-off, mad scramble at the net. Whistle blows with 0.1 on the clock, and the defender put his hand over the puck. So they called a penalty shot. And Doogie, his name's Mike, but we all call him Doogie, who is he's the top blind center on the team. He's going to center ice thinking that they just like lost. And here he is with the puck at center ice going and taking a penalty shot. He didn't even know he was taking it until it was time to save the season. And he buried it. And I was sitting right behind the net for that goal. And me and Dom just grabbed each other and just started going crazy. And they lost in double overtime on a power play that they gave them. And yeah, it was heartbreaking.
No.
But that goal ending the regulation was one of the most incredible things that I've ever seen. Like, it's not even my uncle said, Dom's dad, you watch the Mighty Ducks and you think that's incredible. If Charlie Conway misses the penalty shot, you just go into overtime. Doogie misses the penalty shot, your season's over. Sorry, better luck next year. Well, not even better luck next year, because then they're going on to juniors or to college or whatever. And I mean, that's it. That was their last season of youth hockey.